Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
This is Beyond the Darkness. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, along with me, co-host and producer, Tim Dennis. Tim, for the last 3 weeks, we've spent time talking about some of the more chilling ghost-like creatures that sometimes have been considered paranormal cryptids outside of the realm of Bigfoot, Chupacabra, Mothman. The shadow people, the black-eyed kids have kind of, they don't really fit into any one genre. They're not ghosts. They're not necessarily alien in nature. They're kind of these supernatural cryptids, if you will.
Yep.
But tonight we're going to turn our attention to something a little different. And we've talked about Bigfoot for many years on our show.
Correct.
And it's a fascination to me because it's so easy in one way to dismiss the concept of Bigfoot, because how can some 6.5 to 10 foot tall bipedal massive hairy creature exist in our woodlands around the United States, be there 1 second, gone the next? And it's exciting because we talk about the possibilities and we realize that they're every year they're finding new species that live amongst us, right?
Right.
But yet there's still no definitive proof in the eyes of science that Bigfoot exists.
Correct.
Does this topic still interest you, knowing that, I mean, it's so elusive in nature, the idea that, you know, we're getting some muddy footprints. Sometimes we get hair that doesn't really seem to have any kind of definitive answer to it, or it comes back as, you know, animal, but sometimes it's tainted by human DNA that have been touching it and passing it around. Does that still intrigue you, or does the idea of Bigfoot kind of waning for you?
It does intrigue me, probably more so than anything else. I catch a lot of flack from a lot of our audience because I tend to think that this is the most believable of all the topics that we cover on our show, the most viable for me, in that I can believe that there's something probably out there roaming the woods, other than more so than aliens out in space, more so than a demon popping up in every kitchen cupboard.
Right.
I think that this is probably the most believable of all topics, and it does fascinate me.
The idea that there is more around us, not just the unseen world of the supernatural, but that there may be creatures that are living within the populations of our forests around the United States and perhaps around the world is fascinating. And for a very long time, a lot of people have thought of these as sentient creatures, these miraculous, benevolent forest creatures that are kind of like protectors, if you will, and are there. Sometimes they'll posture and they'll throw rocks or make hooting or screaming noises in what appears to be a way to try to fend people off or maybe scare them out of that area.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people believe that Bigfoot is this kind of magical, mystical, caring guardian of the woods. But only recently, in the last few years, have we started to hear of actual darker encounters with Bigfoot. What are we dealing with? Is there something more malevolent to this furry beast in the woods? Well, that's what we're going to explore tonight. Joining us, we have online Tim Kunbo Baker, Jim Bear King, and they are two of the original members of the Bigfoot Outlaws and have been researching and investigating together since the late 1990s. They were the first to publicly talk about successfully calling Bigfoot. And then they traveled both bipedally or quadrupedally, that they climbed trees, that they could produce and use infrasound, that they would sexually assault livestock, and several other firsts in the Bigfoot community. And at the time, they were highly criticized by the so-called experts. But these are all accepted truths in the Bigfoot community now. They're here to talk to us. They've been on our show, Darkness Radio, and we've talked about some of these Bigfoot dark encounters. They've got more stories, believe it or not, Tim. Unbelievable encounters with these large beasts that seem to be walking around us. And I don't know that we really have any protection against them if they do decide to attack or unleash. So let's try to get to the bottom of this in this edition of Beyond the Darkness. Kunbo, Bear, welcome to the show, guys. Thanks for bringing it out tonight.
Thank you very much. We are proud to be here.
This aspect of the story. Oh, you've got it. I mean, when you told me you have more stories and some more really chilling encounters, Tim and I knew we had to bring you to Beyond the Darkness. And this will give us a chance to examine some of maybe the darkest and perhaps more intimate stories that we wouldn't cover on terrestrial radio with Darkness Radio. And you have brought some of the most fascinating and terrifying stories I've ever heard. So I want to get into this. Guys, as kind of being on the forefront of recognizing and seeing some of these specific parts of Bigfoot and his characteristics, his methodology, and now people around the world are starting to see that this does fit and that it does make sense with a lot of what has gone out there and what has been seen. Do you feel some kind of, vindication and validation now that others have finally come along? Or is it frustrating for you because it's taken others this long to start to see what's really going on?
It's some vindication, but it's also frustrating when we see people that are using our material and even publishing our things that we first talked about and not giving us any credit for it at all. When, 15, 20 years ago, they were lambasting us for it.
The idea that Bigfoot...
And I also think, too, that, you touched on it in your opening statement, Dave. When people didn't know nothing about this thing, except for the occasional people who would run into it into the forest and everything, they was using perceptions instead of actual things that these creatures are capable of doing. Just to see one does not give anybody much material to work with. I mean, we're talking about the classic Roger Patterson, Bob Gimlin video clip from 1967. And that doesn't show nothing but a female Bigfoot walking across a creek in Bluff Creek, California. And a lot of people have just used that one clip to base everything upon it. And, I like to think that people want to try to make of it what they want it to genuinely be. But me and Kunbo both know it's a flesh and blood creature, and like any other flesh and blood creature, it's an animal, it's a wild animal, and it should be treated as a wild animal. It shouldn't be given any leeway in regard to trying to appease it, feed it, or try to make friends with it, because if this thing wanted to be our friend, don't you think that we wouldn't already be discussing it in history books, scientific journals, the whole nine yards? The only reason we don't, it chooses of its own accord not to accept us. It's not us accepting it. It's it accepting us.
What do you both make of the stories? There are many people that claim to have had very positive interactions with these beasts, that they are this kind of benevolent guardian of the woods. Do you believe that there are different races or different species of this Bigfoot, like bears, right? If you run into a grizzly bear, might be much worse for you than running into a brown bear, but running into a black bear could even be more violent for you. Do you think that follows the same vein in the Bigfoot and Sasquatch legends here?
Well, we believe that there are different varieties of Sasquatch in Bigfoot. In fact, we talk about, five or six different types. But within each type, not every one of them are bloodthirsty killers. However, not every tiger is, and not every lion is a man-eater. But there are enough of them out there that and people can swim with sharks without getting eaten. However, you know, we are not the apex. When we're in their territory, we are not the apex creature. They are. And, you know, every one of them are different. Every one of them has a different personality. You don't know when you're going to catch them on a bad day. You don't know what kind of negative interaction that they've had with humans in the past. You don't know what's going on. You know, you don't know if it's an old one that can't run very fast anymore, can't catch deer, and he's starving to death, but it can sure catch a human. You just don't know what you're going to run into. So that's why we say that you can't, if you are, you know, wanting to sit down and sing Kumbaya with them, you're taking your life in your own hands. And there's enough information out there for anyone who goes digging to that you can dig up enough good information to back up that claim.
Once
historical information also. I mean,
yeah, historical.
Eight Canyon incident, the Bachman story that Teddy Roosevelt wrote about in The Wilderness Hunter or whatever the name of the book was. There's plenty of viable historical accounts out there if taken seriously.
Well, let's talk about that because you throw out a name like Teddy Roosevelt and a Bigfoot encounter. A lot of people aren't even familiar with that. Can either one of you enlighten us a little bit onto that story?
Why don't you do it if you want to?
All right. These two trappers, supposedly this hunter told Teddy Roosevelt this story. And
it was a hunter that worked on his ranch up in North Dakota.
Right. And they was in this very inaccessible valley or canyon. I don't know what the name of the state
was. They were up on the Idaho-Montana border.
Yeah, it's in there.
Mm-hmm.
They put out their trap lines. Of course, they established a base camp. And they was having uneasy feelings. They started seeing some strange things and hearing strange things that made them totally uncomfortable. The game animals in that location were not there like they should be. They knew something was wrong. So they decided that they was going to pull all their traps up and leave this location. Well, one gentleman decided to stay back at camp while the other one went to pull his traps. While he went out to pull his traps, he come back to his camp. And I don't know if he noticed it right off the bat, but he found his trapping partner laying on the ground.
He came back to camp and his partner had packed up their packs and he found them and he got to looking for his partner and he couldn't find him, so he got to looking around in the camp and he found him dead. And his head had been broken over backwards, his neck had been snapped backwards, and there were four large fang marks in the guy's throat. And, of course, he was dead. And there were a lot of large, larger-than-human, barefoot footprints around in the camp where he said it looked like that whatever had killed him had been cavorting around in the camp. And so that's...
How can a story like that exist and only so few know that went on? Because it would seem to me that is something that would have been really touted heavily through history's, you know, stories and oral tradition to share that kind of
well, I can
adventure.
I can tell you one that has happened here in the last probably 15 years to someone that you may have heard of before.
Well, sure, and we'll get into that in a second. But, I mean, guys, why, if a story like that took place, why do you think history hasn't taken a more pressing look at it? I mean, you've got major names attached to a story. It's not like, you know, good old Kumbo and Bear were out in the woods one day and this happened. And
right.
You know, this is a president. This is a leader that this, you know, has shared this story. You would think that would have really kind of grabbed people's attention more.
Actually, it was the only story in the book that even touched upon the unknown. And it's the only story in the book that's not taken as gospel. And I find that humorous because when President Roosevelt wrote the book, it was in the same vein as the rest of the stories he had written of his adventures across the country. And nobody had a problem with any of the other stories. It was just this particular one was never given any credence or anything like that. I honestly believe, between me and you and the fence post, that Lewis and Clark probably found out more about these things when they made their Northwest Passage trip to Oregon and Washington, mapping out the Missouri River, trying to find a intercoastal waterway that connected the two oceans. I believe they found out more about these things than has ever been publicized. Because if you'll ever remember, anybody that's a student of history, Meriwether Lewis never completed his written journals. Actually, he was assassinated or supposedly committed suicide on the Natchez Trace at Grinder's Tavern on the Tennessee border. And he had in his possession, supposedly at the time, his uncompleted journals that he was writing up to be published. So I'm thinking it's been a cover-up at least since Thomas Jefferson. I believe this is an animal that the government and humans figured out that they cannot control in any shape, form, or fashion. And so we might as well just deny it to a large degree, because this thing don't want to stand out for just anybody and everybody anyway. It chooses not to trust or associate with humans in any way, shape, form, or fashion.
All right. Now, you said with that story, I mean, that was definitely a violent encounter. Heads twisted around, bite marks. And then you say that these stories continue today. And you've got a more recent story, even within the last 15 years. What is that?
Right. Okay. You may have heard of a very well-known Bigfoot researcher that died recently by the name of Dallas Gilbert. And Bear and I have known Dallas since back in the 1990s. And back then, Dallas, the media has ridiculed Dallas a lot. He and his research partner, Wayne, made a, they thought, legit movie years ago called Not Your Typical Bigfoot Movie. Instead, unknown to them, it was filmed as a spoof. And it really made Dallas and Wayne look bad. But I can tell you 100% for sure that back in the 90s, Dallas was one of the premier Bigfoot researchers in the United States, if not the world, probably. And I'd say he was world class. He was researching. He was the first big name researcher to research in southeastern Ohio, which is, you know, today one of the hot spots of the country. And he had an incident happen to him. He was one of the first guys to use high quality audio and video recording equipment. And they had and he used to take lots and lots of photographs. And he had an amazing collection of excellent photographs that he did not ever release to the public. But one of our longtime outlaws, one of the regional outlaws, a guy we refer to, his nickname is Bubba Gump, but his real name is Jim Hart. Jim was doing very high quality photographic analysis for Dallas and for other members of the Bigfoot community. Now, Jim is a sharp enough guy. He has done a lot of work for the government, even. So, back in the 90s and into the 2000s, his stuff was cutting edge technology. He was good. And anyway, Jim found amazing things in Dallas's pictures, and one of which is the best picture I've ever seen of what we call a dog man, but that's another story. We're not going to talk about that. Anyway, so here's what happened. They were up in a creek bottom that he had talked that Dallas had talked to Bear and I and Dan Rickey and several other outlaws about multiple times where they had run into a particularly belligerent troop of Bigfoot. And they were scared to approach them. But what they were trying to do, they were getting such terrifically good audio, they were trying to hide some recording equipment up there. And back at that time in the late 90s, early 2000s, they didn't have the compact stuff that we have today. So what they were doing is they were hiding a hardwired microphone on a very long amplified microphone cable up at, you know, in some trees and stuff, and had the actual recorder back 50, 60 yards away, hidden. And you know, had large enough batteries to keep it going for a while. They were setting up, and Wayne was setting up the recorder itself, and Dallas went forward with the microphone cable in the microphone and got up to the place that they were going to hide it. He was hiding it at the base of a tree. And Wayne said that he got done with the recorder and looked up to see if Dallas had the microphone set, because he was getting ready to turn it on. He said all of a sudden, out from behind the tree that Dallas was setting the microphone at the base of, he said a very large, like roughly 10-foot tall, male Bigfoot stepped from around behind the tree, snatched Dallas up, grabbed him by the head, popped his head back, presumably breaking his neck. He said Dallas went limp, and said the Bigfoot threw Dallas up over his shoulder and started walking off with him back up the creek bottom through the woods. The thing had gone maybe 30 yards or so, and Dallas regained consciousness. He had on a Ruger Super Blackhawk 44 Magnum revolver on his, in a holster on his hip. Dallas managed to have enough presence of mind. He drew that pistol, and it's a single action pistol, so he had to thumb cock it. He drew the pistol, he thumb cocked it, he reached back up over his head behind him and just stuck it up against something solid and pulled the trigger. At the shot, the Bigfoot screamed and dropped him and took off running, screaming up the creek bottom, out of sight. Wayne runs up and grabs Dallas and helps him to get up, and they get the hell out of Dodge. That incident changed Dallas for the rest of his life. He was never the same after that. Now, the man had unbelievable, I mean, he had cojones like you couldn't believe. Just like a good cowboy, just because he got thrown, he didn't quit riding. He got up and got on that horse again. Dallas kept researching. When he recovered from that physically, he was right back out in the field again. But he was never the same mentally after that. And he still was doing research, still was finding a lot of good stuff, but he was also seeing a lot of stuff that wasn't there. Of course, if I'd had that happen to me, I'd probably be thinking I was seeing a lot of stuff too. I'd be wary of every shadow and every dark rock and stump that was out there. And that's the way Dallas was. So we spent a lot of time looking at things that we said that, well, Dallas, I'm not sure. I think that may be just a shadow, you know. But, you know, after what he had been through, he was, you know, a lot more wary. But, again, give the guy credit. Unbelievable. Courage. He kept going.
Well, with an attack that violent in nature, why is this not in mainstream media? I mean, you would think that, or again, do you believe the government or law enforcement is suppressing these type of stories?
Well, you know, when I was on Darkness Radio with you back in May, I told you the story that we got straight from an active FBI agent of a man that was killed up in Daniel Boone National Forest in Kentucky. And, you know, and it was covered up as a bear killing. It was done by a bear. you know, they don't want, I just think that they don't want to admit that there is something out there, like Bear said, they can't control it. And, you know, if they admitted it was real and admitted what all that it could do, it'd probably shut down every national forest and national park and most of the timberland in the country. You know, it would be catastrophic for us and for the Bigfoot. Then you would probably have every drunk redneck in the country out trying to kill them.
Let's do this. We need to take a break because the Dark Hives beckon with another chilling real-life encounter in this, the Theater of the Mind. Face to Face with Fear, the Forest Encounter of Michael Hollisch. My Uncle Jerry passed away back in 1987 and had left a small plot of land and cabin to me in his will. We had never been particularly close, but aside from a few distant cousins, I was the last of his immediate blood relatives. I remember Dad and Uncle Jerry talking about going up there as young men on week-long hunting and fishing trips and how they loved that place. It never dawned on me that for a place that they loved and spoke about so often, I'd never heard newer tales of their exploits at the cabin. I guess I brushed it off as getting older, having families and life just generally getting in the way. Well, Uncle Jerry did say once, in passing after we lost Dad to a heart attack back in the early 80s, that he would never go back to that cabin alone. I assumed it was because it wouldn't be the same without Dad, and it would probably bring back too many memories. I soon found out for myself why he would never return to that cabin alone, ever again. A few months passed, and spring turned to summer. I decided to go visit the property for myself and give it a once-over. I had no idea what condition it would be in and decided to bring a tent along for backup, in case the roof was caving in or other structural damage may make it unsafe to sleep in. I planned a long 3-day weekend to go check it out and take in a little fishing for myself. Who knows, maybe crack a beer in honor of my uncle and dad while I was there. It took the better part of the day for me to reach the cabin, and to my surprise, it was in pretty good condition. A few broken panes of glass, but overall pretty sound. I set up my tent anyway for backup, just in case the inside was a little less inviting. After sunset, I started a fire in the old stone fireplace and settled in on a folding chair, sipping on a cold one and relaxing to the sounds of the crickets, cicadas, and frogs. That's when I heard what sounded like heavy footsteps on the stairs outside the front door. I waited for a knock or someone to call out, but there was nothing. I figured it may have just been the settling of the old wood, and my mind was again at ease. That gave way quick enough when a bit later I glanced out the window of the cabin and could see the dark outline of a huge form standing there, staring at me, watching me. My heart raced. I thought to myself, damn it, why didn't you bring a gun? Creepy hobos have probably been making this their home for God knows how long. I stood up and faced the window and yelled, "Can I help you with something?" It just stood there. I moved forward, slowly, and it seemed to move back a step. Then I heard a strange grunt by the front door. My head whipped around, and I stared at the door. I hate to admit it, but I was frozen in my tracks. When I glanced back to the window, the large form had gone. I waited a bit and went to the door, slid the lock into place, and listened. It was eerily quiet. I couldn't even hear the sounds of crickets or frogs croaking any longer. It was like the place had come to a standstill. I can't recall how long I stood there not making a move, but man, was I glad I was not outside in that tent. Eventually, I crept to the small pantry, laid out my sleeping bag, and crawled in after shutting and securing the door the best I could. It was a long, dark, creepy night, and the silence would be occasionally shattered by the sound of something big, screaming in the woods. It sounded like no animal I had ever heard before. When the sun finally rose, I gathered the courage to go check out the front window. My tent and belongings were strewn all over the yard. I figured it had to be whatever or whoever was outside the night before. I made my way into town and stopped by the sheriff's office and explained what happened. They assured me it was most likely a couple of bums and I shouldn't worry. Now that they know someone is up there, they'll just most likely move on until I leave. And then they encouraged me to sell the property or maybe look into a caretaker. I grabbed a few more provisions in town and headed back to the cabin. Everything seemed great in the daylight, except the pungent smell that seemed to be all around the outside of the cabin area. I ducked in, put my stuff away, and determined to do a little fishing, set out, found a nice place along the creek, and had at it. All in all, a pretty good day and a nice haul for an unseasoned fisherman. As I started back to the cabin, I heard something moving along in front of me in the woods. The cracking of branches and snapping of woods. I called out to see if anyone was there, and my answer came back in a response of a large, softball-sized rock being hurled at me from my left, landing just inches away, and it hit with a thud. I hauled ass back to the cabin, slammed the door, hit the locks, and peeked out to see what was there. And I could see nothing at all. I cooked my fish for the night and noticed the smell had seemed to have gotten stronger. At points, it was almost gagging me. I ate, relaxed, and cracked open another cold one, and quickly convinced myself that come morning light, I was out of there, back home where I belonged, and thought about how to go about selling the place. That's when all hell broke loose. There came a sound that seemed to start behind the cabin, like a loud that turned into thunderous howls like I had never heard in my life. It seemed to surround the cabin, and then the bangs. I thought the damn wall was going to cave in. The whole side of the cabin rocked as something massive continued to batter it. My eyes were huge, looking toward every window, glancing to reassure myself the doors were locked, and the hammering of what I can only say sounded like giant fists began pounding the walls again. I figured the smell of fish must have brought a very hungry bear who realized nothing tasty was outside, and if he wanted to eat, he had to get inside. I slowly crept my way back to the window on the side of the cabin, trying to stay tight to the walls. My breath was almost like a hot, panting dog as I went into a full-blown panic attack. I peeked to try to see what was out the window and not draw attention to myself. But then I saw it. It had to be damn near 9 feet tall, covered in a thick, dark coat, and was most definitely not a bear. Our eyes met. It bared its teeth, a huge mouth exposed, and yellow eyes narrowed in anger and rage. And again, it let out with a wailing, guttural howl. Couldn't move. It knew I was terrified. It turned and moved toward the front of the cabin, and it moved fast. I ran and threw my weight against the door, holding it for all it was worth, and it began charging the door, hitting it over and over, grunting and howling. I just cried out, "For God's sakes, leave me alone! I'll leave in the morning! I'm sorry! I'm sorry!" I had no idea what I was apologizing for, but I knew I wanted it to end. Then the sound of something letting out a loud whoop, whoop, came from the back of the cabin. Holy God, there are two of them, I thought. The one at the front stopped pounding and howled back. Then I heard it take off running. Then there was nothing. No sound, no crickets, no howls, no noise of any kind. I thought, screw this. I grabbed my keys and my jacket, threw open the door of the cabin, ran as fast as my wobbly legs would take me. I jumped in, gunned the engine, pulled out, leaving a dust trail a mile long as I drove as fast as I could through the woods and down that little dirt road. I never looked back. I never stopped. I just hauled ass and didn't stop until I got home and was safely inside my garage. I'm not embarrassed to admit, I cried like a baby. I shook and I cried, and I never returned to that cabin. I tried to sell it, but I just never could. I just let it alone and never returned, and I never will.
Beyond the darkness.
We're back here on Beyond the Darkness. We're talking to the Bigfoot Outlaws. We've got Tim Kunbo Baker, Jim Bear King, and they are sharing with us some of the more chilling and destructive encounters on file with Bigfoot. All right, Kunbo, I know we heard from you. Bear, let's hear one of the stories, newer stories we haven't covered before on Darkness Radio that you've got for us regarding these vicious attacks from Bigfoot.
Well, what I think a lot of is that's brought on is human involvement. That's what's causing most of this, if not all of it, because every encounter that I've ever run across, you would always get to the bottom of the story, and it always would turn around and be the human involvement that caused it. One of the biggest stories that really blew my mind was out in near Fort Cobb, Oklahoma. And what it was, there was this family there, and they had accidentally, and I use the word loosely, accidentally, started feeding these things. But they thought at the time what they was feeding was raccoons and deer and other wildlife that live in that area. And it ended up not being that. It ended up being a Bigfoot. And when they discovered what was actually taken, the corn and the dog food, they just decided then, you know, they would break off their commitment to feeding the local wildlife. Well, when it occurred, this thing threw a temper tantrum. I mean, when a Bigfoot has its way for so long and people have modified its behavior to the degree that they're not scared enough to approach a human, especially to partake of food given freely, they get really upset. I call their intellect a super primitive intellect, woods wise, and it's not one of a human nature in that regard, but they can logic and reason things out to a large degree. But what had happened was this thing had they had a horse. And I think it was a pet horse that the children of this family would ride. And they come out there one morning. Dogs never give any indication that anything was going on untoward or anything. They come out into the pasture where they had this horse pinned up, fenced in, and the horse was laying on the ground. So they went over there to see what was wrong with the horse, and something had grabbed it by its nose, its ears, and its mane, and twisted its head all the way around. And, you know, we talk about these things breaking a man's neck. You know, we give two examples. But to actually physically do this to a full-grown horse shows extraordinary strength, and it also shows an extraordinary temper. They had the veterinarians come out and check it out, asking what was, you know, cause of death, even though they could see what it was. They had the Game and Fish Commission come out and check it out. They had the intertribal police come out and look at it. They had the sheriff department come out and look at it. Nobody could give a reasonable explanation of what happened to that horse. But the people who lived there, even up until 7 years ago, deadly were still feeding these things. And it even got to the extent that they would take 5-gallon buckets of dog food to this particular location behind their farm, and they would leave the dog food out in the middle of this clearing, and then they would turn around and walk off. It got to the point where when they was delivering this 5-pound bucket of feed, these things would actually walk out the other side of the woods to pick it up and take it back into the woods with them. And they would recover the buckets later on because they were white buckets and you could see them laying all over the hillsides. But they called the local law enforcement so many times, they just said that the people were crazy. They didn't want to hear nothing they had to say. And the local newspaper reporter out there, I'd rather keep the name quiet, but I'll give it to you silently later. They did a story on this, And they even contacted the local sheriff department about it to find out why they was not serious about what happened to the horse and what was currently going on. And she, this reporter, even asked them, they said, well, they still feed these things every day. Why don't you go out there while they are actually feeding them and hang around and check out what's going on? The law enforcement people told them they were not interested in finding out what it was, and none of them was going to even come out there just to give them 5 minutes to possibly even see one coming across the woods to retrieve that bucket of dog feed.
So the main goal, and we talked to another woman who was having issues with Bigfoot and an aggressive Bigfoot or Bigfoot pod family, because they began feeding and leaving treats out for these creatures. When they would not, the creatures would actually come out of the woods to their home, which was in a cul-de-sac. So there were other homes right there, but it seemed these were so aggressive, they didn't care. They would come out, pound on the house. They would jump fences. They would do all kinds of things. So the main thing you think is important to know is do not begin by feeding these. You're not doing yourself a favor. You're not going to ingratiate yourself to them. You're actually going to cause a much bigger problem.
Well, you know, the saying, don't feed the bears. Well, danger don't feed no Bigfoot. I mean, no more than we know about a creature, that no more information that is put out about this thing, because, of course, main reason is in the mainstream collective of the country and of the world, they don't exist. But to those of us who know that they do exist, know that they are real, they got to eat just like everybody else. So you don't just assume on the good side or the clear side that these things won't harm you. That's what me and Kumbo recommend strongly. It's very disrespectful to try to modify their behavior. And if you hook them on sweets or sugar additives and things like this, they're naturally going to come back. It's like a pusher supplying dope to a junkie. After a while, you get hooked on it, and then you demand it. And, you know, people don't realize what they're doing by feeding these things sweets and sugar and chocolates and things like that. Actually, they could probably be even killing them internally. You know, we don't know what their chemical or bodily makeup is, or what it can eat, what it can't eat, how it digests anything, whole nine yards. And that's assuming too much. Another thing real quick, and then I'm going to throw it at Kumbo, is if you're going to sit there and you're going to do all these things and not realize what you're doing, and just say that you had to go on vacation to Florida, or say you lived in Montana or somewhere, and you was going to be gone for 3 weeks. This thing that's depending on you to feed it every day or every 2 days or whatever is expecting that food to be delivered to it. And you don't want one of these things, a 1,500-pound animal, throwing a temper tantrum. Not only are they innocently and ignorantly changing and modifying these things' behavior, if they're not there to feed them, they're going to knock on the next-door neighbor's door. Now, if the next-door neighbor don't even have an inkling these things exist, and something like that starts knocking on the door and you look out the window, what are you going to do? First thing you're going to do is grab a gun, because there's a monster in the yard. I mean, it's the monster in the room.
Now, Kumbo, I know when we were talking off air, you said that it seems the people that are taking this type of abuse and these attacks more are the Native American culture. Did I misunderstand that, or do you believe that that is what's truly going on?
Well, I don't. I think that might have been a misunderstanding. I know they, you know, your Native Americans are more in tune with the, you know, rhythm of nature and what really goes on in the world. And plus, most of the Native American cultures have recognized Bigfoot as a tribe or a normal forest creature, you know, for eons. My great grandmother was full blooded Cherokee, and she, you know, she talked about them just like they were just as normal as a deer or a turkey, you know. And, you know, so many of your Native Americans, there's no dispute at all among them about whether or not they exist. They don't just think it. They know it. Many of them have had encounters with them. Plus, you know, there's a lot of most reservations. There is a lot of boonies, you know, undeveloped land, and you know they like to. That's, you know, their kind of country. So that's why I believe, you know, the getting to know some of the different members of different tribes, especially around Oklahoma and Arizona and New Mexico, I've learned a lot about them, about Bigfoot and, you know, Sasquatch.
All right, I know time's going to get away from us here quickly. Yeah. What? Give us another one of the more prime examples
I've got
of this.
A quick
violence.
One here.
Sure.
One of the things that's a common thread in many sighting reports is people having a bad encounter with Bigfoot when they've been out at night making a lot of noise. You know, running dirt bikes through the woods, having a camp out somewhere, drinking beer, playing loud music, and such. I had an incident happen where I was mowing my grass at about 9:30 at night, and I had one come out of the woods and scream at me, and scared me half to death. And he stayed out there. I thought he'd go away after a while, and I went and mowed somewhere else, and I came back, and he got after me again. And I called it off, quit, went in the house. I called Mary Green, was alive then, and we were friends. I called Mary up and told her, you know, what had happened, and she said, "Oh, Coonbo, don't do that." She said, "Let me tell you something. I just I was asked to help in a disappearance investigation up here by the local sheriff's department. A man was bush hogging after dark, and he was they lived way back off the road up in what they call a cove, or it's like a deep hollow or whatever in the side of the mountains up there, and this is in northeastern Tennessee." The wife told him, "Hey, I'm going to have dinner ready here in about, you know, 15, 20 minutes. And he said, "Okay, that'll give me enough time. I can bush hog all the way down to the end of the drive, you know, to the paved road, and then come back up and I'll be done." Well, she got done and looked out there, and she could see the lights of the tractor, down the road a ways, down the drive a ways, you know, about three quarters of the way out to the pavement. And she thought, well, he must be, you know, something's going on with the tractor or something. Well, she waited a few minutes, looked out there. He's still there. The tractor's still sitting there. She went, "Wonder what's going on. He must be having trouble." So she walks down there, looks around, can't find him. Hollers, screams, yells, and everything, can't find him. She comes in and calls the sheriff's department. Sheriff comes out there. They look and look and look and can't find him. They bring tracking dogs in. Tracking dogs won't track whatever it is. There's some of his smell around the tractor, but no sign of him. By the way, the tractor was still sitting there running, and with the lights on. Mary Green was asked to come look at it and assess what she thought had happened. She got to questioning neighbors and the man's wife, and finds out that they had been yelled at multiple times in the past when they were doing things, you know, making a lot of racket out there after dark in that area. She thinks that, and I tend to agree, especially after what happened to me, that the guy was bush hogging out there on his tractor. And by the way, another thing about this tractor, the muffler had rusted off years ago, and he just had screwed a piece of pipe in where the muffler used to be. So it was a pretty loud tractor. Bush hogging means cutting down the weeds along the sides of the road. And it was our conclusion that we believe that he was going down through there and making a bunch of racket, disturbing the local Sasquatch, and they got a belly full of it, and he was out away from the house. They had an opportunity, so they grabbed him. And there was never hide nor hair of this guy ever found.
When these attacks happen, are there many people that face these things and they'll drag them away, they'll attack them, do something, but then let them go? Or does it seem that when they get the blood, when they want the attack, that person's done for?
Dallas Gilbert is the only person I have ever heard of that escaped from a Bigfoot attack, other than some girls that one of our contacts, that the Bear and I know out in the out in Oklahoma, in one of the tribes, she used to attend an Indian school out there. That's what they called them. Some girls decided that they were going to run away from the school and try to go home. And it was a boarding school. They took off, I can't remember, Bear, two or three of them, something like that, or three or four of them.
Well, I can't
remember. A group of the girls. Anyway, one came back beaten up and bloodied up. The other ones were never found. So there's very few people ever survive a physical encounter with one of these.
Dead people cannot tell tales.
Now, there's that. Yeah, certainly. Yeah. When there is this kind of activity going on in an area, is it usually just one rogue Sasquatch, or have people seen pods of them that are being aggressive?
They have both. There are stories out there of just one killing people. There are stories of multiple Bigfoot attacking and killing people. The story that happened up in Daniel Boone National Forest that I alluded to earlier, that we heard about from an FBI agent, that person was killed by multiple Bigfoot. Of course, the incident with Mary Green, we don't know.
I think it's like a feeding frenzy. When they get cranked up, depending on how many's present at the given location at that point in time, it all depends on, you know, how they work themselves up to what kind of mental position they decide to peek out into. Me and Kumbo both know that these things are scared of us for a reason, but they will work themselves up into a stage of an aggression.
Yeah.
And I believe a lot of times when you run into, say, more than one individual, it's easier for them to build themselves up into a physicality-type mode than it would be if it was a single solitary one. But usually the single solitary ones normally only confront or attack single solitary humans, like solitary campers or whatever. It's hard to really say, because as I stated earlier, the deceased don't tell no tales after the fact. I mean, it's all said and done over with. All we get is whether it's an open casket or whether the coroner has decided it was a bear attack or whatever.
The attacks like this, I mean, it's terrifying, guys. Why do you keep putting yourself out there to investigate these claims if you know that it can be this fast, this furious, this violent?
We're trying to learn the most we can for the protection of the future of the people. Actually, that's why we do this. Everybody attacked us when we first came forward in the late 90s. And we knew there was other people in the, especially the United States, that were just like us. When we first come on the scene, we was attacked because we wasn't discussing what this thing was doing in that Patterson-Gimlin segment, because that's the only evidence that a lot of people even have to go by. And we started telling them these things doing these other attributes, and they didn't want to hear it. And they would ridicule you to the extent where you would just leave the internet, leave the subject, leave the community or whatever, the groups, because they would outshout you and they would lie you down. In other words, they'd call you a liar and accuse you of lying and everything else. We know that when people hear us and we tell of these things that do the same exact things that they have either witnessed or heard of, that's when they get interested. And if the government's not going to help us, me and Kumbo decided a long time ago we're going to help everybody else, because these people aren't crazy, and we're not crazy. And that's what makes you madder than anything, is to tell you what you saw you'd never seen, because it don't exist. That just makes me mad beyond means.
With all the encroachment of development and housing developments and looking for more natural resources, do you believe that we're pushing these creatures out into becoming even more aggressive?
I believe they are losing some of their fear of approaching our dwelling areas and stuff. There are shelter belts around and nature belts around different communities and stuff that we know of that are lousy with Bigfoot. Bear and I, we were lamenting some development, lakefront development, that was going on right across the slough from our farm. And we went riding over there one night, and I was showing him this hollow that the Bigfoot travel up and down, coming and going off of our farm. And right in the mouth of the hollow, right in front of the waterfront, we're building a new house. And Bear said, "Look at that." And I looked up, and there was one standing there peeking around the corner of that house under construction, looking at us. I couldn't believe it.
And what drew our attention to it was he had an outdoors light in the backyard of this brand new house they was building. And this thing was smart enough. I never would have seen him if it hadn't have been for his shadow that stretched way across the corner of that house. I mean, the shadow was lengthways across the ground because the light was behind him. If it hadn't been for seeing that shadow actually moving, I never would have seen the booger. But when I seen him, I pointed him out to Kumbo, and we both watched him then. That shows you how smart they are, but then again, that shows you they're not as smart as a lot of people want to think they are, because he never took into account that he was hid, or he thought he was, but his shadow was not. I mean, it's that kind of type mentality. You just got to pick and choose and figure out what you need to look for in these little minute details that helps give it away.
We have about two and a half minutes left together. Give me one of the creepiest encounters that you've currently collected as we roll out the episode this evening.
One of my favorites is some neighbors down the road from us. I'm going to call them the Pennies. Mrs. Penny was washing dishes, and it was in October, and the full moon was just rising, and she was enjoying watching the moon rise, and then she happened to look back out there, and the moon was gone. And she leaned up to the window, the kitchen window, to see, well, if some clouds come in or what. And all of a sudden, as she leaned up to the window, this Bigfoot face leaned up to the window from the other side. And they were like nose to nose through an eighth of an inch of glass. Scared her half to death. She starts backing up, stumbling backwards across the kitchen going, like that. Her son, Sean, was sitting at the dinner table doing homework. He looked around to see what Mama was carrying on about. He saw the thing looking in the window. He screamed and jumped up so quickly he turned the dinner table over. Their other son, Buzz, was out in the den watching TV. He comes running there to see what in the world's going on. He sees the Bigfoot looking in the window. And, by the way, it turned out this wasn't a Bigfoot. It was a dog man looking in the window, and he reaches over there and flips a switch. They had been having other things going on. They had their dad had installed floodlights on all four corners of the house. He turned those floodlights on, lit up the world, and the thing whirled and took off running. Buzz went running up, flings open the front door and sees the thing running across their yard and out of the yard and down the road. That story's always just given me the creeps because it was happened to some neighbors of mine.
Well, I can't thank you guys enough. The Bigfoot Outlaws, Tim Kumbo Baker, Jim Bear King. I know we're going to be hearing from you guys again with more creepy tales in the future. So thank you very much for joining us on Beyond the Darkness this evening to share your stories.
We were proud to be here. We thank you.
All right. Now, next week, when we return, we're going to take another jaunt into the strange and unusual. We're going to discuss, from internet meme to motivation for murder, we're going to talk about Slender Man. We'll do that next week here on Beyond the Darkness.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.